on air, WICC 600. Online, WICC600.com. Let's stimulate your brain with the Lisa Wexler Show.
And welcome back to the show today as part of our continuing conversation as we keep the dialogue open. And you're welcome to call us at, you can call me at 203-333-9422, 203-333-9422. Well, joining us for the second time in a week is A.J. Woodson, publisher, founder of Black Westchester, which is a periodical that comes out that really keeps abreast of what's happening within the Black community and serving the interests of the Black community in Westchester County. And also joining is his good friend and my old friend, Damon Jones, who is a Westchester County Corrections Officer. Damon, are you retired now? You have to remind me because it's been a few years.
No, I'm still working. Good morning.
Good morning. And you are you the chief of the or the head of the organization of Black Corrections Officers as well?
Well, I'm the New York representative of Blacks in Law Enforcement of America, which is an organization that encompasses all different law enforcement departments. But I am also active in the National Association of Blacks in Criminal Justice, which comprises of corrections, sheriffs, and probation, people that deal with recidivism.
So, Damon, you must have a tremendous amount of thoughts on where the Black Lives Matter protest movement is and the amount of white as well as Black people and people of all colors that are stepping up here. I would like to hear your thoughts, Damon Jones, on this right now. What are the primary thoughts that are coming to your mind every day as this story is unfolding?
Well, I mean, the primary thoughts has always been the goal of people that scream criminal justice reform and law enforcement reform is the change of policies, procedures, training, and legislation that governs those policies, procedures, and training. The problem is we have continued to see these horrible videos and hear these horrible situations of people being shot at and killed or choked, and our politicians have yet to change the laws. Our politicians have yet to negotiate in the collective bargaining agreement, which is the contract between the union and the municipality, measures of accountability when they violate policy, procedure, and training.
Something's going on in the background. Is this AJ? Wait, Damon, what's going on in the background there? Is that you or AJ?
That's not me. That's not me.
AJ, you got to put it on mute then. You got to put us on mute, AJ.
You got to mute.
Hello, I'm sorry.
AJ, please put your phone on mute then, because I want to hear Damon, and I'm hearing too much background noise.
I'm sorry, there's a car accident in front of my house. I'm muting my phone now.
Oh, are you in the accident? Are you okay?
No, I'm okay. In the house. Go ahead.
Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. I hope they're okay. So, Damon, continue. But let me hear specifically, because I know that specifically you've been advocating for changes. When you saw what happened in Minnesota, I mean, everybody, the whole country was sick about it and in despair about it. But specifically, what policy or procedure did you go to in your head that said, if this had been in place, this would not have happened?
You cannot say if it was in place, because I don't know what policies are in the police department in that city, because of the fact that there's no national standard of continuum of force policy. But in general, when someone is in cuffs, you do not apply force anymore, because he's usually non-threatening. Once you cuff a man, he's non-threatening. To have him on the ground and not stand him up or put him in the car is very questionable why he kept his knee on the man's neck. And coming off of the Eric Garner incident,
yeah,
we question why hasn't been been a national cry and change from the National Association of Police, Chief of Police. Why haven't they sent out, look, this will be the national standard in how we in putting pressure on your neck or around the head or anything like that. So it's a failure of police management and politicians to address the need of change in use of force policies. I do not know what's in all police departments' policies are different. People think that one policy in one police department is the same in the next police department, and that's not necessarily so. So before I could really say that, I have to know what is the use of force policy and what does that police department allow and what they don't allow. Now, because they fired the officer, I can assume that he violated some type of use of force policy within the department.
So, Damon Jones, let me ask you this. We're chatting with Damon Jones, who is a corrections officer in Westchester County. What is the use of force policy in Westchester County? And particularly, does it vary among the municipalities? Is there a countywide directive to the municipalities? How does that work?
No. In Westchester County, there's no countywide directive. They do teach the continuum of force, meaning that you are allowed to use force necessary that force is bringing to you, all the way up to deadly force. If somebody has a gun, you are allowed to use deadly force. So even with pepper spray, when you see a police use pepper spray against someone, that is technically physical force. Because right. He's a trained person to use that. Now, if a civilian takes his pepper spray or his nightstick, because that civilian is not a trained person, that is deadly force. And then this is according to the law. This is according to state law. So I think the main thing, people need to understand the state laws, but every state is different. There's no national standard. There's no real national standard.
So wait a minute. So are you saying that if I have pepper spray on me, and in self-defense or in aggression, either way, I spray it at a police officer, I have given license?
Well, the pepper spray that a civilian will have is totally different from what a police officer has. The grade of the pepper spray. Let me make that clear. The grade of a pepper spray. Is to what they sell civilians is totally different than what the police officers carry.
Which is more potent?
More military style. Like, yeah, it's very strong.
It's Which very, is strong? The strong. One that the police have or the one that the civilians can buy? Which
the
is
one
stronger?
That the police have. The one that the police
okay.
have.
So, but here's my question. If I have the one that's less strength, but, you know, I think I have it in my purse to protect me against an assault or something, but if I were to use it in a situation, in a confrontation with police, if I were to use it, are you saying that that would give the police license to use deadly force against me?
If you're using something you bought over the counter, no. Right?
Okay.
If you take what that officer has, yes.
Ah, I see. Interesting. So if I'm having a struggle, if I'm in a struggle with the police, I'm in a hand-to-hand situation, and I take away his weapon, whether it's a baton or pepper spray or whatever the hell it is, then that is considered to be something that they could respond with deadly force against me. That's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. But the police officer should be necessarily trained that he shouldn't get in that situation where his weapon is taken.
Yes, I do. Of course I do.
Right.
So, and what about the conflict resolution? This idea that, because I've had other guests on before who have said that one of the deep issues in the, you know, from the A to Z is that there's a huge middle ground of de-escalating conflict. And this was a former police officer who said that he thought police officers in their training spent way too much time in learning how to use their guns and not enough time in learning how to de-escalate. Is that something that you think is important in terms of cultural change?
Absolutely. Correction officers I don't know if, you know, the listeners, a lot of people think correctional officers carry guns all the time. In the jail, we do not carry guns, right? We do not, in the jail, we do not carry nightsticks. We do not carry any type of weapon. And usually it's one officer with 60, 70, or 80 inmates in one housing area. So you're talking one officer with 80 inmates. Wow. You have to be able to de-escalate situations quickly. You have to be able to talk because if you're in trouble, it's going to take at least a minute for your backup. So you're talking about one officer dealing with 80 inmates, and if he gets in a scuffle with one, it's going to take at least a minute. So you have to be able to de-escalate. We have always said that police officers need to be trained more in de-escalation, because they are always quick to go to the nightstick or the gun. And I've seen firsthand how they escalate situations, even in my own personal life, when they do not know I'm law enforcement. And when you start talking to them, then they understand you might be law enforcement or something. But I've seen it firsthand. So yes, that's something that is missing, actual de-escalation. Correctional officers are taught that all the time. Correctional officers are taught that in our yearly training classes to de-escalate. Correctional officers are also taught, the majority, at least I know where I work, in dealing with mentally ill. How do you de-escalate someone that's mentally ill? Police officers in general are not taught that. So those are other, and then that's why you hear about a lot of people that are mentally disturbed are beat up or shot and killed by police officers, because they are not even trained to deal with them on that level in de-escalation. De-escalation is very key.
Let me ask you something. We're chatting with Damon Jones, who's a corrections officer in Westchester County and a very highly active member on behalf of Black law enforcement nationally and statewide, regionally. Damon, are you troubled? You wear the uniform. You're wearing the uniform. Do you get a lot of flack within your own community for being on the side of law enforcement?
Absolutely. Me personally, because you know the people see me and they know I'm out there and I'm not afraid to speak truth to power and tell the politicians what need to do. You know, I get a little different respect in the communities of color. But in general, Black officers are looked at as traitors to their community because they do not step out enough or speak out enough. There's a lot of us that do, but the press does not really look at, well, how do Black officers feel about that? You know, because we have to deal with the racism in society. We have to deal with our communities looking at us as traitors. And then we have to deal with the racism that's within our own departments. Like, nobody has thought, and I said this to a group of chiefs just the other day, when we hear our fellow white officers call a Black man the N-word,
yeah,
how do you think we feel about that?
Terrible.
Right. And
do you hear it a lot? Do you hear it a lot, Damon Jones? Do you hear that a lot?
Not around me. I got two officers fired for that craziness. They don't say that around me.
Okay.
But they will. Wow. What they will do is they will start little stuff to see what they can say around you, and if you're a Black officer and you don't nip that in the bud early, then they will get comfortable and just feel that you won't say anything, and then the words really start coming out. But I want to say this: we have to address the racism in the police department, because to me, historically, racism is in the DNA of law enforcement. The police department was created on catching slaves. The police department was created on enforcing what they call the slave codes and the Black codes. Everybody can look it up that's listening. And they were called the patrollers back then. That's where we get the word patrolman from. So we understand that, but we have to change it. And if we're not willing to put laws in place to address what is now looked at as police crimes, nothing will ever change.
So let me ask you this, Damon Jones, on the other side of it. When you see, and I know they're not the same, we're taking every effort, and we've had a lot of guests to make it really clear as a message, that the protests have a legitimate, I mean, very legitimate grievance, and we need to have some structural and cultural change in this country. I think pretty much the majority of Americans polled all agree with that, no matter what their, you know, no matter what their political leanings are. I think most people agree that, and all people I know have specifically said that that excessive brutality in Minneapolis was completely, I mean, it was horrid. It was a murder in plain sight. But when you see the looting that's going on, and let's just talk about New York City, our beloved New York City, and the video footage that's coming out, the grainy footage, what looks to be like people coming down from poorer, urban, largely black communities, and some people of color, maybe Latina as well. I guess what I want to know from you is your own personal reaction at the dinner table. Do you think it sets back the cause? Do you think people just should get over it? You're a corrections officer. Do you think these people should be rounded up and arrested because they're thieving at night? What do you think?
I think with any society that we need law and order.
Okay.
I also believe that the looting and the rioting is unnecessary, and it does distract from the cause at hand. I also believe there are also those that what I call protest profiteers that profit off of situations like this to cause anarchy. But that's also our fault.
Yeah.
Because we're not doing what we're supposed to do as a society.
I hear you.
We're not looking at this as a community problem, right? Because it's a black issue, you know, or, you know, it's not my community. And when you have what I call protest profiteers that allow people to tear up their own community, to destroy their own grocery stores, I get it when they say, well, we don't own the grocery stores anyway. So why would you tear them up if you don't have black grocery stores to replace the white grocery stores? Why would you burn down a Target if you don't have a black Target to replace it? If those that agree with that want to use that type of argument. But it takes away from what we need to do in actually correcting the problem. You could go all the way back to the Watts riot.
Yeah.
And many riots that happened, history shows the riots that happened in the black community were over police brutality.
Yeah. But they end up hurting the black community, because if the whites flee and their investment flees and their money flees and their enthusiasm to help the community flees, then what happens is the poor people that are left there, you have a lot of black on black crime and things don't get better. And it's bad.
Exactly. And that was my argument to the protest profiteers. How do you burn that down and you're not bringing in a black-owned Target?
Right.
Or black-owned grocery store. So if you're not doing that, then you are putting these cities, you're setting these cities back. Watts is still trying to recover.
Sure.
When the Rodney King riots, it took decades for the businesses to actually want to come back.
That's right.
So this takes away from the real discussion at hand, that we have to pass laws that define police crimes.
Okay.
We have to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Damon Jones. I'm sorry I missed AJ this time. We'll get AJ back on the show soon. Damon Jones, Black Corrections Officer, it's wonderful to speak with you. Next time I hope to see you again. It's been a while, and, you know.
Yes, it has.
And give you a hug and say hello in person. But I'm glad that you're well. I thank you for being on the show. You'll come back on the show. Much appreciated, Damon. Really.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. All right, we'll be right back. These messages on WICC, The Lisa Wexler Show. Stay tuned.